intera come sbirri di frontiera in un paese neutrale. Anni persi ad aspettare qualcosa, qualcuno, la sorte o perché no la morte. Ma la tranquillità, tanta cura per trovarla, sì la stabilità. Un onesto stare a galle di una fragilità, guaglio, di una fragilità, guaglio io io. Forse un tossico che muore proprio sotto al tuo balcone, forse un inaspettato aumento roba sono, forse un licenziamento in tronco roba padrone, forse una risata in faccia in un carabiniere. Non so bene, non so dire dove nasca quel calore, ma so che brucia, arde e freme, trasforma la tua vita, no tu non lo puoi spiegare, una sorta di apparente illogicità ti fa vivere una vita che per altre assurdità, ma tu fai la cosa giusta, te l'ha detta quel calore, ti brucia in petto, odio mosso d'amore, d'amore. Guaglio, curro, curro, guaglio, curro, curro, guaglio, io, 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 curro, curro, guaglio. Tanta mazzate pigliate, tanta mazzate, ma tanta mazzate, ma tanta mazzate pigliate, tanta mazzate pigliate, tanta mazzate pigliate, tanta mazzate, ma tanta mazzate, ma una buona l'ammarata. È nata, è nata, è nata,
nata,
centro sociale occupata,
nata,
centro sociale occupata, e mogo cazzo c'è cacciata. È nata, è nata, è nata,
nata,
centro sociale occupata,
nata,
centro sociale occupata, e mogo cazzo c'è cacciata.
Curro, curro, vaglio, curro, curro, vaglio, io, 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 curro, curro, vaglio.
Quello si vi chiedo perché, ma mai guardi a casa sta vetta pare, e lo spazio popolare non è buono
perché,
perché controculturale magari
perché,
rompo cazzo a troppa gente sì ma allora
perché,
tu ma vuoi rompere cazzo e no pure a te, ma se non sta nervaturio staccio buono
perché,
perché mi sono rotto cazzo pure sulle tavare, figurami se senti che tiene a ricere a me, strunzate 40 anni potere
perché,
perché gente te ne fa messa fa strunziate, tu ma manno celerina ma sgomberà a me, ma non basto manca niente mo to dico oi ne, perché non mi fai più male a giambare ad accare.
Curro, curro, vaglio, curro, curro, vaglio, io, 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 curro, curro, vaglio, curro, curro, vaglio, io, io, curro, curro, vaglio, curro, curro, vaglio, io, 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 curro, curro, vaglio, curro, curro, vaglio, io, io.
Hello and welcome to Arts Express here on CITR 101.9. I'm your host, Katie Fitzpatrick. We have a great show for you today. We have a review of the play Hecuba, as well as the movie The Diving Bell and the Butterfly. We also have listings for you today, and we have an interview with Marianne Sawchuk and Supriya Ryan, and they're both organizing festivals and events right now that deal with women in the arts here in Vancouver. So we're going to be talking to them about women in the arts and the arts scene in Vancouver and bunch of issues revolving around that. So we're just going to do a review and some listings before we talk to them today. And first up, there's going to be a review which was done for me by an arts volunteer named Aaron C. And that's the one of Hecuba. One of the things I love about the theater scene is how hard it is for actors to really make it big. I'm sure this must be heartbreaking for them, but it's great for me, because it means that I get to watch their thrilling, groundbreaking, moving performances pretty cheaply. And Blackbird Theatre's Hecuba is thrilling, groundbreaking, and moving from start to finish, while student tickets to see the show are only $15. It's the story of a group of Trojan women who survive the Greek sacking of Troy. Hecuba is their disgraced queen, a woman who has lost her crown, her city, her husband, and most of her children. It's a story about the aftermath of war, how its victims must come to terms with their new lives, and how for Hecuba, as for many victims, coming to terms with her fate means continuing the cycle of revenge and violence. The play was remarkable when it was first performed in that its author, Euripides, chose to cast Greece's mythic enemies, the Trojans, as the protagonists in his story. Hecuba was written to make the Greeks uncomfortable, to ask them to consider the suffering of their enemies, the vanquished broken women left behind when the battle is won. As such, the play is timeless. The women of Troy remind us of the women of Iraq, of Rwanda, of Germany. The universality and the humanity of the play is brought home through subtle production techniques, including images of death and destruction in the 20th century that are occasionally flashed on the backdrop, which towers over the stage. All the parts in the play, even the men's roles, are played by women, reinforcing the idea that all the world's women are united in the solidarity of victimhood through Hecuba. Like so many women, refuses to accept this. The costumes, too, remind the audience of this universality. The robes the women wear belong in Troy or in Palestine or in Toronto. But for the most part, the audience doesn't need help making the connection between suffering today and suffering 2,000 years ago. The story, which is masterfully adapted by Vancouver poet laureate George McWhirter, is one we recognize without any help. And just in case you're thinking that you've seen enough war commentary in the last 7 years, don't worry, you haven't. At least not until you've seen Hecuba. Because contemporary war films, whether they are objective documentaries or the wry, ironic, self-congratulating Michael Moore variety, don't go where this play dares, into the realm of raw human emotion. This play is cathartic. You leave the theater feeling that you've screamed, you've cried, you've stood up, that you are like Hecuba, a winged fury, a bitch with blazing eyes. That was a review by Aaron at Seif, Arts Volunteer. And once again, Hecuba is playing at the Vancouver East Cultural Center until Saturday, January 12th. A few other theater events that are going on right now. The one that Marian Sawchuk is organizing. We're going to be talking to her in a few minutes. That's Women at Plays 3, a showcase of Vancouver women in theater featuring original plays by local playwrights with all female casts and directors. That's at the Jericho Arts Center at 1675 Discovery till January 12th. Also going on right now at Havana is one that's interesting to me as I work at a restaurant. It's called Dish Pig. Greg Leducci plays 15 roles in TJ Dawes' behind-the-scenes look at the life of a restaurant dishwasher. That's till January 19th at the Havana at 1212 Commercial. Another one showing right now is 3 Days of Rain, Richard Greenberg's play about family secrets, starring Richard Stroh, Jade Shaw, and Elian Mandelkorn. That is January 10th to 12th at the Beaumont Studios on West 5th. Another interesting one, The Blonde, the Brunette, and the Vengeful Redhead. Lucy Peacock portrays 7 different characters in a one-woman production about the shattered life of a suburban housewife. That is January 12th to February 2nd at the Vancouver Playhouse at Hamilton and Dunsmuir. Finally in theater, there's The Last Night of Ballyhoo, Alfred Urey's play about a quirky Jewish-German family living in Atlanta. That's January 12th to February 2nd at the Metro Theater on Southwest Marine. Also, some different things going on in music right now. There's the Bach Cantata Project, Cantatas for Alto and Double Concertos. That's at the Shaughnessy Heights United Church on January 11th at 8 p.m. Also, there's Some Things Old and Some Things New, January 11th at 8 p.m. at the West Point Grey United Church. It's a Veda Chamber Music presents a concert of Beethoven and Brahms featuring Joan Blackman, Eric Wilson, and Jane Haynes. Finally, in music, there's Sakuhachi and Koto Duo, a Further East / Further West production featuring Tokyo-based composers and performers Curtis Patterson and Bruce Hubner. You can find more information about that at www.vancouverpromusica.ca. That's January 13th at 8 p.m., and that's at Western Front on East 8th. Now, we're going to give you some more listings in a little bit about literary events and comedy, as well as galleries. But for now, we're going to start talking to Marian Sawchuk and Supriya Ryan. So, first of all, you guys, do you want to tell us a little bit about the projects you're currently working on and how they came to be?
Shall I go first? Okay. Women at Plays 3 was obviously, it's our third festival. That's why it's called Women at Plays 3. And it's something that I started 3 years ago. I found that I'm an actress, and I found that I wasn't getting called out for as many auditions as I like to. I wasn't doing as much theater as I wanted to, and I just thought that I would. There is also, theater and film and television world, there is a lot more roles for males than there are for females. Mm. So I just thought, well, I'm going to take the bull by the horn and produce my own stuff, and that way, create roles for women. Because I thought there's a lot of women in the same boat as I was, waiting for the phone to ring, so to speak. And so, yeah, I decided to start Women at Plays to have a festival of all female playwrights, directors, and actresses.
Great. And yeah. Supriya?
Hi. Well, I work at the North Shore Women's Center, and basically about 4 years ago, women's centers across BC had major core funding cuts. And so a lot of women's centers, like our own, engage in fundraising initiatives to compensate for that loss of core funding. And this year we have one of our main fundraising events for the year called Crimson Cabaret, Celebrating Creative Women. And it's basically a rare collaboration of artists and performers from many different artistic backgrounds, from Korean dance and comedy and flamenco, Indian dance, aerial performance, and all the technicians, all of the stage managers and performers behind the scenes, volunteers and on stage are all women. So it's really kind of a rare and unique project that we've worked on for, there was one last year as well, and so we're really looking forward to it.
Now, you mentioned that you feel there's not as many roles for women as for men. Do you think there are other challenges that women face in the Canadian arts world, and that goes to you as well?
I think, you know, one of the challenges is stepping out there and producing your own work. I mean, that's unfortunately it's something that, you know, there's not a lot of even female producers out there. So I think that's one thing that, you know, you as a performer, you kind of expect to, and it's probably, to tell you the truth, for male performers as well, to expect just to be hired. And then when that doesn't happen, you kind of just sit back. And I think that's, you know, you kind of squash your creativity by waiting. You just got to get out there and do stuff.
Right, absolutely. Now, do you think that, like, coming out and seeing a show like this that's all women, do you think, like, there's a different benefit for that for women than there is for men to come and see the performance?
Well, I think that all performances can definitely be inspiring for men and women, but I think it's particularly important to really advocate having the creative female voice out there just to inspire other women if there's a lack of representation in whatever form of artistic media is there at the time.
Yeah, I think that because we're in the middle of a run right now for Women at Plays 3, and there's a lot of men that have come up to see the shows, and you can hear them laughing just as hard as the women. They are obviously... you know, enjoying it. I'm getting great feedback from the men. I have males, you know, approaching me saying, "Oh my goodness, you got to do this again next year. This is a great show."
And, they
are definitely enjoying it as much as the women are. It is, you know, a lot of women's issues that are being dealt with in the plays, the six plays that we're doing, but a lot of them are global issues, and a lot of them men can definitely relate to because they have wives, mothers, you know,
or they might even have
sisters,
the same problem themselves,
similar issues, definitely.
And it's a sort of a safe place for women to explore that creativity where they might not have other venues to do so. A lot of the time.
That's true.
Now, what would you say if someone said, like, well, having just a thing for women is sort of exclusionary to men, like, we don't get to have a men's only sort of thing, like, what would you say to that?
I would say that the same is not said for all male venues. You know, if there's an event that's all men, people don't assume that it's exclusionary and women aren't invited to that. So I think this is the same thing. This is just exploring a demographic that may not have representation otherwise. You know, it doesn't mean that it's exclusionary to anybody at all.
I definitely, you know, Women at Plays is definitely all female involved there. We do have a male sound designer, Darren Hales, so that we call our production company 32 and a half sisters because he's got one X chromosome, right? So that's why it's called that.
Oh, nice.
The funny thing is that it's hard to get for the technical side in theater. There aren't very many females in working as techs, and the ones that are, I try to approach them every year, but they're always really, really busy. So we were really lucky. Darren is awesome. We were lucky to get him on board, but mine is exclusive, not the audience, of course, but for the production wise, we have female playwrights, female directors, and all actresses. It's, you know, I just always say to some of the males that say, "Hey, what about us?" And I go, "Well, there's, you know, a boys' club of your own. It's called Hollywood."
Okay,
it's a little joke.
So it doesn't label itself that way, but it, like,
no.
Men's plays, but it kind of it happens that way anyway, I guess, sometimes.
Yeah.
So, Marianne, I noticed that in some of the plays, the women sort of feel conflicted between how they should behave and how they actually want to behave. Like, there's a woman who is pregnant and she knows she's supposed to be happy, but she doesn't know how to feel about it, and someone who wants to feel a certain way about her marriage, but everyone wants her to feel differently, etc. So what kind of thing, and this obviously goes to you as well, what kind of roles do you think women are asked to play in the modern age? Because it's obviously not the same completely as it was in the past, but...
Yeah, it seems that we've shifted into this super mom or super female stage of of the age that we are in right now in, mm-hmm. in our so-called modern age, because we've gone from women being, you know, completely suppressed to, mm-hmm. You know, and then being the housewives, that kind of thing. And then now all of a sudden we've got this feminine power and we're empowering ourselves. But what I think women are finding is that it's so much like that. Now we're expected to work full time, to be mothers, to keep cleaning the house. Mm-hmm. And honestly, and my husband's probably like, but it's true. It just seems to fall on, and almost every woman I've talked to, it seems to fall, even if you're working full-time and you have children, and the husbands, they do, and the partners, they do help out, but it seems like a majority of it does fall on the women. And mm-hmm. I think that's what the struggle is with, you know, some of the plays that we're doing when, you know, like in Surprise, when, you know, she finds out she's pregnant and she's like, oh my God, because it also, too, there's a struggle. If you want to keep working, and then if you want to be a good mother, then there's that struggle. Like, you want to be great at work, but you want to be a good mother, but you can't be in two places at once. So it's a total struggle, and mm-hmm. it's something that I think we're all working through. I mean, the men are evolving to being more, you know, domestic, mm-hmm. and helping us out more, of course. But it's something that we're evolving into.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I would also agree with that, and I work with a lot of independent artists, so and what I found through all artistic mediums is that there's just a lack of variety in, mm-hmm. in the representation of individuality. There just seems to be like four or five characters that are stereotyped, and mm-hmm. when women step outside of that, it's somehow not interesting, or it doesn't get enough attention, or it's too something. So what I found with a lot of the independent artists is that there's such flair for individuality and creative exploration, and it just, for some reason, still doesn't get the attention that I think it really deserves, because it's beautiful and it's extremely unique. And
I read an interview as well once where this woman, she was an actress in movies, and she'd done all kinds of traveling, all these different things, and the reporter, she'd just had a baby, and the reporter said, oh, is it just the most fulfilling thing you've ever done? And she was like, well, I don't really feel comfortable answering that question, because if I tell you that it's not, then you're going to tell me I'm a bad person, but you know, I've done a lot of fulfilling things in my life, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there's sort of this idea that motherhood is the fulfilling thing for women, and it probably for a lot of people it is, and that's mm-hmm. their choice, you know, but
yes.
it can be hard to... I don't know. It's not for everyone, obviously.
Yes.
When I was reading this review that was written for me, it mentioned that all the world's women are united in the solidarity of victimhood when they were talking about war. So what do you guys think of that statement? I know it's a little out of the blue, but...
I'll say that although maybe to a certain degree that could be true, I think that it's important not to dwell and typecast womanhood to just being victimized. You know,
right.
there's many characteristics of womanhood that should be celebrated and recognized instead of, you know, how they've been subjugated by men. And that's
right.
really how they define themselves is, you know.
Right.
So I think the ulterior to that is recognizing that women are powerful and creative individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that with, you know, I mean, victim sounds such like a harsh word, but
mm-hmm.
I think that if, you know, if it's meaning loss and, you know, loss of your child, loss of your husband, that kind of thing, that women are really strong. And, you know, we are the creators of life, and we will persevere. And I think that's mm-hmm. if there is tragedy that happens like that, and like that is going on in Iraq, that, you know, to grow stronger as a people of the world,
mm-hmm.
I think that it's women are obviously a major part of that, and some
mm-hmm.
of it is the way we're bringing up our children and how we're teaching them.
Mm-hmm.
And just to add to that as well, as though I think it's important to build solidarity in times of tragedy, I think it's also very critically powerful to build solidarity in moments of celebration and positivity and excitement, you know. So I think creative events like this are really important for communities to come out and support, because you're really celebrating positive femininity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, another woman who was going to join us today was Nicole Kalpi, and she's organizing something in February, which is a burlesque performance, which is raising money for women's sexual assault support groups, and she is performing that herself, and a lot of the members in the group have actually been victims of sexual assault, and they're using this sort of sexual empowerment through the burlesque dancing as a way of overcoming that. So I'm wondering, how do you see that as the sexual empowerment as a way of overcoming the victimhood. Like,
I think it's completely taking control of your sexuality, and that, I mean, that definitely translates to being in control of yourself, especially women who have been sexually assaulted. That complete, their power has been taken away, especially obviously their sexual power, but their whole, I mean, their strength, their, you know, everything's just kind of taken away from them. And I think that's like, I think, a wonderful thing that they can take back that power, and in a safe environment such as, you know, a dance where they're, you know, alone. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's how that they can take back their power, definitely.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, obviously, at this day and age, we've recognized that sexuality is a positive and a beautiful thing. And I think when it becomes problematic, it is, especially for burlesque, and why I'm particularly critical of, like, Christina Aguilera sort of stereotyping burlesque as something empowering, is that I think it's misrepresentative of empowered sexuality, because it's adhering to standards that somebody else has set for her sexuality. So it's a regurgitation of ideas and characteristics of what feminine sexuality should look like.
Okay.
And if you're outside of that, then you're somehow, you don't have the power to be in control of your sexuality, or you shouldn't be celebrating it. So I think in the context of, like, independent, creative women celebrating their sexuality on a stage is a beautiful thing. If they're celebrating different experiences, backgrounds, sexual orientations, body size, that's a very beautiful thing. But in my personal opinion, I don't find that Christina Aguilera does that.
I was going to ask, because she said that her music video, Dirty or whatever, was a way of empowering herself. And she said, well, this is just ridiculous because I'm getting so much flack. And, you know, Ricky Martin just did a video where he has an orgy and no one even said anything. Like, maybe because Ricky Martin's not as famous. But, you know, the point is no one saw that as bad, that he was being so sexual. But for her, it was. And so she was saying, you know, I'm not playing into something. I'm empowering myself. But then a lot of people are going to say, no, you're just trying to make money by selling yourself out to people. So.
There, unfortunately, there still is a double standard out there for what obviously for what males can do and what females can do. Also, too, it was like part of that double standard comes from, you know, like, and again, it's this old traditional stereotype. But you know, we don't, you know, like, you know, I've got nieces, I have a daughter myself, and as I don't want them to think they have to look like that. And so I think that's where it comes from. And Supriya was talking about celebrating different sizes, shapes, you know, and I think that's maybe where it comes from. But again, there is a double standard out there. You know, there is definitely double standard out there. But as far as, and people, we still are really uncomfortable with female sexuality and it being displayed on videos like that, and what message does it send, you know, like to my daughter and my nieces, you know, when they're, my daughter's only 11 months old, but, you know, I mean, you know, further down the road, or my nieces, right? What does it say to them?
Absolutely.
You know? And yet it is a double standard. It's frustrating because, you know, no one's given flack to Ricky Martin for...
Then at the same time, I guess we could also wonder if you know, he's also being, you know, objectified or something like that. So maybe it's bad in both cases, you know.
It is bad in both cases, right? But I still think that men have access to expressing their individuality on a wider spectrum than women do. So that's where it becomes problematic for me.
Definitely, yeah. And women will, you know, criticize other women for that. Like, I mean, look at Britney Spears, because she wasn't big at all when she went on the awards, and then she got all this flack for being fat. Like, I'm sorry.
Of all the things to pick on.
And a lot of women were the first people to turn around and say she looked fat. She didn't look fat. She didn't look fat at all.
Yeah.
Not at all.
It's
like, it was crazy.
Yeah.
And yet, that's what happens. That's what happens when women go and say, you know what, I have a bigger body, I just had a baby, I'm, you know, whatever, and then look what happens, you know?
Yeah, and so maybe she's saying, well, I wanted to wear the skimpy outfit and go out and be sexual because I want to be empowered. And people are saying, well, you can't be because you're too fat in our world, whereas somehow it's okay for Christina Aguilera to do that. So they're still kind of fitting into a certain...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, I think we're...
Someone who's not perfectly beautiful tries to express themselves. It's not okay.
We're cultured, I think, to be critical of womanhood, no matter what it is.
Yeah.
And it's crazy. It's totally crazy.
So on a sort of separate note, like, how do you guys feel about the performing arts world in Vancouver in general? And, like, how do you see it changing in the future?
Well, actually, Marianne and I were talking about that earlier and saying that although we appreciate the passion of creativity in Vancouver, there just doesn't seem to be the attendance and the excitement in the communities for it as much as I think that there should. I guess I'm kind of comparing it to Toronto a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, even though per capita they have a lot more people there, it just seems that here people would like to go see movies or or drink hot chocolate in their home when it's raining, which I can understand.
Yes.
But there's still a lot of, you know, creative people that are doing really wonderful and powerful and subversive work in Vancouver that it needs to be represented and supported.
Yes. Yes. That's actually one of my choices about for Women at Plays. I keep the ticket prices really low, and every year I have an argument with, you know, all the cast and the directors and the playwrights, and but I say, you know what, I want people to come to see the theater. I want bums in the seats because I want people to see us. I don't want to be worrying about someone's going to go, oh, I can't afford to go, or you know what, I, you know, it's going to be same price, like, or it's cheaper to go to a movie. That's why, I mean, our ticket prices, we have them $12 for weekdays and then $15 for Fridays and Saturdays. So it's because I want to get people out to see some wonderful theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true. They're we've been really lucky though with Women at Plays. We've had fantastic houses, but it's kind of built for the 3 years, but it's taken, you know, that long to build. But but I do agree that I think though too is this, you know, doing different things like Women at Plays, like creating our own, you know, the show that Supri is doing, the Crimson Cabaret, you know, getting some really innovative you know, shows out there that Vancouver wants to see.
Absolutely. So don't drink Starbucks for twice a week and you'll be able to afford
to go to a play. Yeah,
exactly.
For sure. Do you guys want to give us information where people find more about your shows that are going on?
Yeah, absolutely. Ours, Crimson Cabaret Celebrating Creative Women, is on Saturday, February 2nd. It's at Centennial Theatre in North Vancouver, and you can get some more information through Centennial Theatre or through Little Sisters or North Shore Women Center at www.northshorewomen.ca. And the tickets are $22 before January 24th, and you can call us anytime to come and get them. There's also a silent auction, and it'll be an amazing show.
Great.
I hope to see you there.
Okay, Women at Plays, we're at the Jericho Arts Center, 1675 Discovery Street, Vancouver, this Wednesday, January 9th, Thursday, Friday. We close Saturday, January the 12th. The shows are at 8 p.m., and the you can reserve at 60 or get information as well at 604-224-8007, extension 3, or at www.jerichoartscenter.com. And we've got 6 original plays from female local Vancouver playwrights, and it's a great show.
Great. Okay, thank you very much. And we'll be back with Arts Express with a review of Diving Bell and the Butterfly after this message.
Let me get this straight.
Experimental days of broadcasting as such are over.
Thursday, January 17th, CITR celebrates Art's birthday with another 24 hours of radio art.
To confuse.
The Art of Sounds. Thursday, January 17th, midnight to midnight. 24 hours of radio art. Happy birthday, Art. From CITR 101.9 Vancouver for CITR.ca.
Well, of course, that's the sound you don't hear very often. But it is the real thing.
You must keep reminding yourself. It's just a
sound collage.
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 Only a madman could understand it all.
I can understand that.
All right, so you're back listening to Arts Express here on CITR 101.9. Once again, I'm Katie Fitzpatrick. Now, I promised you a review of the film The Diving Bell and the Butterfly. Unfortunately, our interview there was so interesting, we won't have time for the listings as well, but that's all right. We can fill you in next week on what's going on. Now, this movie, it is what some might call a miracle that the film Diving Bell and the Butterfly exists at all. The movie is an adaptation from the novel written by the late Jean-Dominique Bauby, once editor of the French Elle magazine. After being paralyzed completely by a stroke at a relatively young age, Bauby was only able to move one eyelid. Fortunately for him, a speech therapist developed a system of speech for him by which she read out a series of letters, I, E, I, N, A, L, S, etc., until he blinked on one letter. She would write down this letter, and in this way, Bobby would spell words, sentences, and eventually the novel, The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, a work which describes his ascent from feeling submerged and trapped, like one stuck underwater in a diving suit, to re-emerging as a butterfly, using his mind and his imagination to hold on to life and what is human inside him. The film is certainly inspirational. Most of us would probably feel that in that condition we would have little will to live. And indeed, the first thing Bobby spells out is, Je veux mourir, I want to die. Over time, however, he learns that there is